founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Hey, welcome, welcome one and all to the FSH Society Radio Show. Another month has come upon us. Another episode is here for all of us to share and enjoy. And thank you for being a part of that. Last episode of 2017, as we bid 1 year adieu and open the door for the next, I suppose. And today, I hope, will be a great show to remember and to, you know, just something to remember 2017 by, right? It's been a great 2017 when it comes to the show. Glad we could air it. Glad we could bring it to you every month. And this episode kind of show our thanks. It's going to be a lot about you, this episode for sure. This episode, I really would love it if more listeners would chat room in, call in, send me email if they'd like to kind of share their story. Maybe it's a story of the year that's been for you. Maybe it's just something that you want to share with the rest of the group. Maybe it's a little bit about your struggle, or maybe a little bit about your triumph, or maybe you're a caregiver. You want to talk about your family or friend that is dealing with FSH. There's so many avenues and so many directions to take conversations, and always wanted to make this FSH Society Radio Show, you know, part of that, to have it be almost like a support group, lack of a better term, for you to come and share your story. Because selfishly, I've shared mine a couple times, bits and pieces of it here. So you have questions for me, you want to know more about me, I'm happy to share it. I mean, that's why I'm here. I just love to share my story with others. And I'm opening the door for all of you to do that tonight for sure. Call them a featured guest tonight, but I guess more or less people to kind of inspire you to chat in with us. We're going to have Carden Wyckoff on and Lexi Pappas on, and we're going to have these great women on to talk about their story. And I know another FSHer is planning on calling in later as well. James Rice is tentatively going to be calling in as well. We've reached out to these people to kind of, Hey, why don't you come share your story, be a part of this, and hopefully it'll inspire others to call in and use the chat room. And I get it. You know, you don't always want to call in to a show, you know, answer your call live on air and all this stuff. And you know, I just want you to be comfortable and know there's no judgments. There's no judgments here. It's a safe place. And, you know, we can have a little fun. And I want it always to be entertaining and but also supportive. And, you know, I just don't want to forget the fun of it all, of course. It doesn't always have to be a downtrodden thing. I mean, last month, we had a fantastic featured guest, right? We had Max Adler on. And talk about a man that shared a fantastic story about his family's struggles with FSH and then how he's this, you know, phenomenal road to being actor and doing a lot of roles and theater and where his inspiration came from. And just he had this a lot of energy and wanted to share his story with us, and we thanked him for being here, and hopefully I'm sure we'll have him on again. Of course, he's a huge ambassador for FSH Society as well. You know, June Kinoshita helped get that guest booked and got Max on, so we always thank June for that. She's a huge help in getting this show up off the ground every month. And for next month, you know, first show in 2018, what I have in store for you all is two gentlemen. So we'll have kind of a featured guest segment next month in January. Justin Skisuk and Patrick Gray will be on. And I don't know if you know them. I talked a little bit about them last month of a film I saw, a documentary about the two of them, lifelong friends. Justin Skisuk is in a wheelchair He has a neuromuscular disease as well, and I know he wants to talk about his struggles and his diagnosis and that story, as well as the story of him being best friends basically since they were born with Patrick Gray, and how they tackled a massive undertaking and walking the Camino, which is like a 500-mile trip over weeks and rough terrain and mud and rocks, and it's amazing. If you want to know more about it between now and when they come on, I'llPushYou.com is that website, and check it out. They have a book. They have a documentary that was out. You can order it now on Blu-ray, DVD, etc. So there's their plug. Great guys, and I've gotten to know them now a little bit more personally, and really been an inspiration for me. So hopefully we can I know we will have them in that next month, and hopefully you guys will all chime in there too and give some great questions. So there's your homework from now till then, you know, that we can do that. And of course, you know, if I didn't mention this, then I'm not stating the obvious. And the obvious is we just had Christmas, right? Now it's December 27th. Christmas was a couple days ago. Hope you all survived the holidays, and if it was with family or family and friends, or just one or the other, or maybe you were like me and you just kind of stayed close to home, and we all kind of low-key Christmas, as I like to call it. Not a lot of traveling. Used to when I was a kid. I live in Wisconsin, so traveling isn't fun in December and January. Like, for instance, right now it's 3 degrees. That's right, 3, not 30. It's only 3 degrees out. Actually, I think it might be less than that now. Actually, it might be minus something. Anyway, point is, it's darn cold. And so it's kind of nice at Christmas time when you kind of just snuggle in and do the gifts and the eggnogs and whatever we're gonna do, and you kind of hunker down. And I had a really nice Christmas that way. I will make an observation, like I like to do in these so-called monologues of mine as these shows start. And I did air quotes. I know you can't see that, but because I like to sprinkle in a little bit about, you know, observations I see with this. I mean, I've only been officially diagnosed for not quite a year. And even though, like many, you kind of know something's up, right? But now, of course, my family's known, for about a year. And last Christmas was exceptionally awkward. The hugs were a little lighter, and, it was just, the mood was different, right? This Christmas is a little better that way, because like, oh, look, he's still standing, he's still walking, this is good a year later, maybe this isn't such a big deal. Well, I can honestly say that I've noticed some changes in myself, and like so many that have FSH, and they have not been pleasant changes, but they're not been drastic, thank God, and, I just continue to march on. So another reason why I was glad that Christmas was a little bit quiet. So today we open up that as well. If you want to share your Christmas story, maybe it's something funny. Maybe it's like a National Lampoon style. Maybe you like to share, but let's keep it clean. It's a family show. And then, of course, we have the new year right around the corner. And as I mentioned, as we started off the show, that you kind of knock the door open to 2018 coming up. And I really hope that things open up for everyone, and including this show. If you want more of the show, or you got great guests that even you know about that you want us to have on, and you want to hear from them, please do that. Why don't I share all that contact information for you right now? If you want to dial into the show today, you can. That number is 949-270-5953. You can go to fshradiohost@gmail.com. That gets right to me, right here, in front of my face. That's my personal email. You can drop a line there if you'd like. You can go to the Blog Talk Radio, where you're listening most likely now, and you go in that chat room. Right now we have two guests that are in there. Welcome. They're just under a guest number. See, so you don't even have to have your name associated there. You go in as a guest, and you can chat in. So if they had questions as the guests go on, or comments or things they want to share, they can. But like I said, always, too, if you're ever so brave, please dial in. That's 949-270-5953. Like I mentioned, we got some great guests coming on again this show. Kind of a packed show when you really think about it. Kind of juggling two, possibly three. And then, of course, June Kinoshita at the end of the show will give us some news and notes as well. Maybe she has some great stories she wants to share as well. So, we always run the risk of going over an hour, but that's the joy of this, right? Because I don't want to confine the show into something that has to stay within this realm. And I think this show is a great example of it. It's not just a traditional talk show or traditional podcast. I really want this to be support. I want this to be fun for you to interact and know that you're welcome to. And to me, that is absolutely huge to do. So with that being said, why don't we take our first break? And when we come back, we will welcome in Karin Wyckoff in, and maybe she can tell me how to pronounce her last name in case I botched it. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show. You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this thing. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org. Join the FSH Society. Get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active. Connect with local members. Volunteer for research and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org. Hey, welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. I'm your host, Tim, and thanks for joining us. Thanks for being a part of your evening here on December 27th, last show of 2017, as we end one year and march on to the next, right? That's just what we do. We roll on. We roll forward. And as I mentioned, this show is a lot about you tonight. We got a couple featured guests lined up. But we also want you to call in or chat room in if you'd like, if you have questions for us, comments, stories to share. That's how we'd like to end the year and end the show for 2017. So thanks for being here. And you know what? And we also mentioned, of course, that we have Karin Wyckoff on. She's calling in. And looks like she is on the line right now. So let's bring in Karin Wyckoff on right now. Hello, Karin. How are you?
Hey, Tim. Great. Thanks. Happy New Year. Well, almost.
Yeah. Yes, almost, right? Yeah. Happy New Year to you as well. Happy holidays. Hope you had a great Christmas as well. And first and foremost, thanks for taking the time to call in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I look forward to answering your questions and helping out anyone that I can if they're recently diagnosed or just want to know their story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of where, you know, June and I about, I don't know, I think it was about, it would be a year ago February when we did the first podcast, FSH Society Radio. And that was more of a traditional podcast. It was all recorded and kind of, you know, all done ahead of time and this and that. And this is obviously, as you know, because you're here right now, that this is live, you know, and that's kind of where we've gone with it since. And in our hopes to make it kind of a community support group type thing where people could, you know, come on, share their stories, share their, you know, comments, or just interact even a little bit with each other, make some type of connection, because let's face it, sometimes that's what most people do need, but they don't always know how to find it. So I guess my first question for you is, there's a lot of first questions that I could really shoot at you, I'll tell you, because you know, you are what seems to be an ambassador of the FSH or FSHD, FSH Society. You're very involved. So I guess let's start there. You know, when did you realize that something was off, or when were you diagnosed? Can you go back in the time machine and kind of start from there?
Sure thing. So my parents noticed early symptoms when I was 4 years old. So it started off with mainly when I was falling asleep at night, my eyes weren't shutting all the way, so you could see just the whites of the eyes a little bit. And also when I was in physical education, what they call it, PE, back in the elementary school days, I could do all of the physical activity tests except a sit-up. So I could do the pull-up. I could do the mile run. I could, you know, do the push-ups and everything else, but I couldn't do a sit-up, which was really odd. And then other things like blowing out birthday candles was really challenging. So it was some small weaknesses in my face, but then also in my core strength as well, is where my parents, my mom, I would call her like a helicopter mom, and she knew that something was off. And so we just went around from doctor to doctor, and my primary care physician, who obviously was a pediatrician, said, yeah, Christian, which is my mom's name, there's definitely something off here. I don't know exactly what it is, but we really should encourage you to just seek out any specialist, and I'll work with you to try and figure this thing out. Because at the time, back in I was born in 1993, and when around like 1998, muscular dystrophy was not on anyone's radar, really. I mean, it was brand new. The genetic testing was few and far between. We actually ended up going to Rochester, New York, to Dr. Ravi Tawil's clinic, and that's where, after like 4 years of trying to figure out what was wrong with me, he took one look at me and was like, I know exactly what you have. You have FSHD, muscular dystrophy. And so that was when I was about 8 years old. And then we did the genetic testing. Yeah, it was a relief almost that we were finally able to figure out what was wrong with me. I mean, it was, you know, the difficulty.
Yeah, I mean,
Go ahead. Okay. Oh, I had my whole family tested, and for FSHD1, because FSHD2, they didn't have a genetic test back in the 1990s, and I was a spontaneous mutation, so lucky me. None of my family members are carriers, and they don't have the mutation on with DUX4, and they're non-manifesting as well, so they're not carriers, and I just happen to be the lucky one.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, does it feel like it's that you're more alone in that regard? Because as you said, no one else is tested in your family. Do you feel like it's almost tough in a way then to have them relate to what you're going through?
A little bit. I think because the disease progressed, It's a pretty slow progressing disease. So I think not so much. I mean, in the beginning I felt a little bit isolated, but at the time I was an adolescent. You know, I was 9 years old when I was diagnosed. And I showed very little symptoms. It wasn't really until I hit puberty when the disease started progressing and walking became more and more challenging. But I kind of took the opposite approach of, instead of going down the, oh, woe is me, feel bad for me because I'm disabled, I took the complete opposite approach and said, I'm going to fight this thing. And so when I was 15, I started up my very first fundraiser. I did a jewelry trunk show, and we raised $3,000 or $4,000 like in 2 days. It was insane. I was really amazed by it. And yeah. And so that's the approach that I took. So, and I thank my parents, especially my mom, because she always taught me to be an advocate for yourself and to stick up for yourself and really to just, we're going to tackle this thing and find a cure for it. And we're not going to just sit on the sidelines and let you totally, like, you have to fight for it. So. I'm very thankful for my parents for telling me that.
And that's absolutely, you know, obviously true, but tough too. You know, when, I mean, you were diagnosed when you were 8. So when was that switch kind of turned? Like, was it immediately? Was it at that young of an age you said, I think you said, I'm gonna fight this. I'm going to stand up against it, not say you're disabled. When did that kind of, you know, switch flip in your head? Like, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go at it this way.
When I was about 14 and 15 is when I started showing symptoms of walking getting more and more challenging. So it was the small things like ascending stairs and then walking long distances. In high school, I was in a very large high school, and so having to walk between classes during class change, going across campus basically, was very challenging for me. It started getting more and more difficult. So I think that's when the flip of the switch kind of happened.
Right.
But I was still very athletic growing up. I played basketball and soccer and softball and you name it. You know, I was very athletic. And but it wasn't really until when I was about 15, I would say, I used to run a lot. And so after school, I would go running throughout the neighborhood. I would do like 3 or 4 miles a day.
Right.
And one summer, I went out. I hadn't gone running in like a month after summer got let out. And I went out running, and I just remember my legs just not being able to propel themselves forward. And I just collapsed on the concrete, and I just remember I started crying because it was so sad for me, because it was something that I loved. And that's kind of when it caught up to me, where something that I was so, you know, I really enjoyed doing, it was kind of like my me time that was taken away from me. And I wasn't able to really run anymore and do something that I loved. So that's
right.
Kind of when it, you know, I was like, okay, I went through a little period of time. It wasn't very long, because I grew up in a very supportive family, and a family where it was like, okay, we're going to tackle this and fight for a cure and do everything we can to stop it. So it was only just a couple of months of, oh, woe is me. And then it was like, okay, time to get over the pity party and you know, propel yourself forward.
Right? Yeah.
You got to pick up your, just got to pick yourself up and keep moving forward. So
is that, I guess, what's the advice you give someone that's been recently diagnosed? Is it that get up, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, so to speak, and attack it the best way that you possibly can?
I think the first piece of advice is you have to really accept the fact that you have a debilitating disease, and it only really has one direction, and that's downhill. Sure, you can exercise and you can do everything to keep your muscle tone, but at the end of the day, it's a slowly progressing disease. So you first have to accept it. And once you've gone over the fact of, I'm scared that other people are going to treat me differently, or I'm scared that I have this disease and I don't want to be public about it. Once you get over that, then you can become an advocate for yourself and for others. So that's probably the biggest piece of advice, is to first, once you accept it, then you can start raising awareness, start fundraising, just letting the world know that muscular dystrophy is a thing. And FSH is one of the most prevalent forms of it. And currently, there's no treatment or cure, even though there are drug trials going on, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we are making progress in that regard. There's no doubt. But I'm kind of with you when it comes to the, I don't know, I guess put a spotlight on it is kind of was my attitude, Yeah. And I was kind of immediate about it, you know, because I don't want my mind. I don't know about others, but, you know, I mean, I'm 42 years old and I knew for a long time there was something off, but wasn't until I got to this age where I was like, whoa, this is something significant. And I immediately said, not only to myself, but to my wife, I said, this is it. You know, like whatever this is, just so you know, I'm going all in and I'm going to attack this.
Right. And that's such an important attitude to have. Once you get over that hurdle of just self-pity, self-doubt, anything that's negatively reflecting on yourself, once you get over that, then you're able to take on life in a whole different direction. You're able to have a positive outlook on life and realize that, yeah, there's going to be a lot of obstacles in your way, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of things in your favor. Like I just transitioned into a wheelchair about 2 years ago. And since doing that, all of my friends love traveling with me because I get first priority in everything.
Right.
I did a lot of traveling this year and it was like first person up to the Space Needle in Seattle, or like priority seating on airplanes and first aboard and anything. Everyone just kind of, you know, they see a wheelchair and they're like, oh, okay, here you go. You can go first just
right.
so we can get you out of the way. But it's like, okay. There's
like I'll
this
take that.
Funny thing. Exactly.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, there are a lot of benefits to having, quote, a disability that a lot of people take for granted or they don't realize.
Right.
That,
yeah.
Like, even having a handicap sticker on your car. I don't have a car, but I know you get much closer. You get front entrance priority, basically, to the store that you're going into. So you don't have to spend 30 minutes trying to find a parking spot. It's right there.
Front row. Yeah.
So.
I'm not at that point, but I have told my friends that, you know, when I told them, okay, this is what I have, this is where it could lead. You know, there's no guarantee of anything,
right.
but I said, if it does, we're going to have some sweet tickets to the ball game.
Exactly.
Because, you know, I get that, you know, a closer seat or the non-obstructed view and all that. So, you know, you're right. You got to try to find some type of silver lining to it all. Well,
exactly.
thanks, Carden, for joining us. We got another caller coming up. It's going to be Lexi Pappas. So we'll let you go for now, but feel free to listen in or chat room in if you'd like, if you hear something that you want to comment with. We do appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so that was Carden Wyckoff. Now, the way I see it, she's a huge ambassador for this. She does a lot of work in that regard when it comes to blogging and writing about it and kind of getting, like I said, that magnifying glass or that spotlight on what this is. And that's what I was hoping. We could get people to interact and talk a little bit. If you want to get on and let me know, again, I know I see a couple callers in here with an area code of 208. I know that you've been listening for a while. This is a great form of listening. If you want to be on for some reason or interact or talk, you can do that. I believe you got to hit 1 and it'll pop up to let me know that you want to be part of the show. What I can honestly say is that when you do that, you know, I'll have you on. And I don't see your name. So the only thing we're going to go off of is the last 4 digits of your phone number. I'll chime those off and let you know that you'll be live on air. So if that's something you want to do, I believe you hit 1. So why don't we get ready here and have our next, featured guest in. She is Lexi Pappas. I believe I see her here on the switchboard. Hi, Lexi.
Hi,
welcome to the show. Hi. Thanks for taking
the
time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks thanks for coming on and sharing your story a little bit here. And I'm sure you were listening in, as I saw, Carden's comments and what she had to say. So I guess my first question is always, like, I love when like guests come on and this and that, to kind of give that backstory or that kind of history of what you're about, or, you know, in your case, and just like hers, you know, when was those moments that you realized maybe something was off for you, that you started that hunt for what is now FSH?
Yeah, so it was about, well, so first of all, FSHD runs in my family, I guess you could say. I have it, my mom has it, my uncle has it, my grandpa had it, he passed away, but his dad also had it. That's as far as we know. But I'm sure it went up, you know, up in generations. So it was about like fifth grade. I had been doing gymnastics basically my whole life, but in about fifth and sixth grade, I started getting to notice that there were certain moves that I couldn't do, you know, like pull myself up on the bars, and my mom noticed because she knew, she was looking, you know, my whole life. She was worried, like, maybe I would get FSHD. Like, she had to make sure. She wanted to look for symptoms. So she kind of could tell that there were certain things I couldn't do in gymnastics anymore. So eventually I ended up quitting gymnastics just because, you know, I wasn't moving up a level and it was getting really hard for me. And then, you know, middle school went on and it was like my shoulder blades started to stick out. So that was probably the most, the first something I really noticed that was really prominent. And then eventually as time went on, you know, high school, freshman year, I wasn't able to run anymore. You know, my face kind of started, the muscles started kind of deteriorating my face. Just random things like the running and everything. And since it ran in my family, like we all knew that's what I had. You know, I never actually was officially diagnosed with FSHD. We just knew because it was in my family, so there wasn't a reason to get an official diagnosis since I had all the symptoms, and we just knew that's what it was. So it was kind of a shock to me, but since I saw my mom, you know, living with it every day, it was kind of just seems normal in a way, and I don't even remember when, you know, finding out that I had it, but I think the fact that it was such a slow progression, it didn't really impact me as much until, you know, now where it's getting a lot worse. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of my story. Since it ran in my family, I guess it was a lot easier in a way because I had, you know, a support group that knew how to deal with it and I knew what they were going through. So we were able to talk about it and relate to each other. So that was
right.
Nice to have.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. So then that's where your stories are almost on opposite ends, where you have a family history. And she did not, Cardin did not. So then obviously she has a huge support group with her family regardless. Yours just comes from a support group mixed with more experience. And
right.
I guess then my first instinct to ask you then next was, well, then do you feel then like, is it almost scarier for you because you have seen what the road could lead to or no?
In a way, definitely. You know, like I see my grandpa and I guess his is different. So I've noticed, I guess this hasn't been proven, I don't know, but as the generations go down, in my family at least, it's gotten worse. So, you know, like my grandpa was diagnosed at 30 and that's when he first started showing real symptoms. My mom was like high school and my uncle was, you know, around the same time and I was, you know, fifth grade. It started, you know, fifth and sixth grade. So it just seems that it comes earlier every generation. So it's hard to kind of look at my grandpa and think that that's how I'm going to be at that age. You know, I could be worse or I might not be, you know, you never know. But I mean, it's definitely given me like a better outlook on, you know, how it affects me. And I notice that I think it'll affect me in the same way it affects the rest of my family, hopefully, you know, I don't, because I've noticed in different people with FSHD, like they all have different symptoms or, you know, one thing's worse or one thing's less severe. And in our family, like our facial features aren't as affected as a lot of people with FSHD. So it's just different. But I've noticed that in my family, it's kind of been the same. So, I mean, it's helped, but I guess it is interesting to see, you know, how it's going to affect me in the long run. So, I mean, we're all hopeful for some kind of treatment or something to help stop progression, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, it seems like you've also taken, though, the role of you're going to fight it, you're going to be an advocate, you're going to make it known, and you're going to try to raise money and awareness and all those things. In fact, you've started a blog. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's funny because I actually wasn't always like that. Like, so I really started noticing since, like I said, I knew I had FHD in middle school, and pretty much middle school up until freshman year of college or sophomore year of college, I completely like hid it. You know, I only told my best friends, which was like a few people. I didn't ever talk about it. You know, I kind of pretended that it didn't exist. But, you know, as it got more severe and everything, I kind of realized that I should probably do something about it instead of just sitting back and, you know, letting it take over my life. So I first started my blog to kind of for myself. Like, I remember my mom told me, you know, you should try to start a blog. You know, maybe it'll help you kind of cope with things. And so I did, and it was for myself. But over the years, I've had so many people reach out to me through my blog, which is really awesome that, you know, people are actually seeing it, because I didn't think that it would be like a public thing. But I think it's definitely helped people. And then, so I'm just trying to do everything I can. Like, I've been really involved in film my whole life and making videos. So I made a documentary that, you know, has gotten like almost 25,000 views on YouTube, which is really awesome.
Wow.
And I think it just kind of, there hasn't been like one, you know, from a family like this where it runs in four generations. And it's just like cool to, I think for people it's cool to see, you know, how it affects a family like this, and, you know, they can relate to, like, I have a lot of people reach out to me being like, oh, I can relate to this so much. This is really helpful. So I think, you know, it's just, I feel really happy that I was able to actually step out of my shell and talk about it to people and spread awareness, because I think it's helped so many people, and I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, but, you know, you kind of went even, like, above and beyond, though. I mean, I know that having that blog, as you said, it kind of was for you, and it was a coping mechanism to some degree, I'm sure. It was a way to kind of get that out, you know, get those thoughts out of your head and kind of vent. But then it becomes public.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and how was, because I've kind of browsed the blog, I've read several of the posts, and what I loved, honestly, was those comments that were coming back. And what was your reaction when you first got that notification for your first comment on a blog that you kind of thought, well, I'm starting this just for me, but it turns out it's for others?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was crazy. I really, like, 100% did not expect anyone to see that blog. I was thinking, you know, it's public, maybe someone will see it, but how are they going to find this random blog? Like, no one was looking at it. It was just, like, my mom knew about it, my boyfriend knew about it, my dad, you know, not many people knew about it. So I had no idea that someone would find it. And then that first comment I got, someone relating to me and telling me how much it meant to them, I was like, you know, it just made me think, like, wow, I really need to keep writing these blogs so that, you know, people can relate to these problems that I have. Because I know we all face the exact same problems, if not, you know, maybe not exact, but we've all faced similar problems. So it's cool just to relate to other people, and it made me just, it was honestly like the first time I heard something, it just was really surprising, and but it made me feel really good about it, and, you know, it made me want to keep doing it. And that's what really made me start, you know, making that documentary and fundraising and just realizing that it had an impact on people.
Now, tell us a little bit yet then about that documentary. You said that it was available, was it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I've always been into filmmaking, and I used to make movies with my friends, and my mom was into movie, you know, making videos. So I learned through that, and I just wanted to do something with my experience in film and just to, you know, showcase or explain to people how it affects our family and tell our story. So yeah, it's on YouTube. That's the only place it's on, but I've been submitting it to film festivals. I went to one film festival in Atlantic City. So, you know, it's just fun to see where
nice.
I can go with it and who I can share
Absolutely.
The story with.
And what is the title, so those that are listening can find it?
So if you just search Growing Up with FSHD on YouTube, you'll find it, or just FSHD. It comes up one of the first options. So it's easily searchable on YouTube.
So is there more documentaries then in your future? Because it sounds like it.
I'm thinking about it. I don't know. I might have to do, like, you know, I might want to do, like, small videos just to kind of go off, like, maybe talk about one experience or, you know, like, a short documentary about one symptom and how it affects me, or maybe even get other people involved. Or I was even, my boyfriend and I are trying to kind of start, like, a movement for disabilities in general. So, you know, it could be more widespread to the other disabilities and not just FSHD. But, you know, we're just trying to, I'm just trying to find ways to use video to spread awareness. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, that's a great way to use your gifts. And we appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us. And, yeah, and just like I mentioned to Cardin, if you stick around and listen a little bit, and if there's someone else that has a story to share or looking for some advice and you want to chime back in, we obviously welcome that as well. But thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is an awesome way for people to share their stories. So I'll be listening to others. Thank you.
Thank you. So that is Lexi Pappas. And what I loved about her story as well as Cardin is that they kind of grabbed the bull by the horns and just went for it and used their talents and their gifts to help advocate and let people know what this is and how they can help. So what we'll do right now, why don't we take a quick break, and we come back. We have a couple other callers on the line. We have, I believe, James Rice is going to come on and share his story. We'll have him up next, and I know there's a caller waiting on hold. 8475, your last four digits, will get you on as well. So let's take our quick break. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
The FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for joining me here. We've had some great callers so far. Cardin Wyckoff was on, as well as Lexi Pappas, and they were talking about their stories and their early diagnosis. And, you know, one had it in their family line and one did not. So fantastic stories and about what they're doing with it now, using their gifts to advocate and to get awareness out there. And so we thank them for joining us today. If you want to chime in, we do have time yet in the show. We got a caller on hold. We're going to get in. But first up, though, we want to bring in James Rice. He's emailed in and earlier and said he'd love to be on the show if it wasn't too late. It's never too late, James. Never too late. So we welcome James Rice in right now to share his story. Welcome, James.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Happy to be here.
So thanks for taking the time, sharing a little bit about whatever it is you'd like to talk about, share a little bit with us. Perhaps it's the story of yourself. So why don't you go at it?
Yeah, sure. So I was diagnosed when I was 18 via DNA test. I've always had some symptoms. When I was a kid, my mom would tell me that, you know, I had a crooked smile. I couldn't really sip out of a straw at the center of my mouth, and some facial weakness. But that was really it when I was growing up, upwards to around high school. I mean, I was a big athlete all growing up. I really loved AYSO soccer. You know, I would run until like I was wheezing and like, you know, my blood was turning to battery acid and things like that. And, you know, I really loved athletics and doing all that kind of stuff. In high school, I ran cross country and played lacrosse and other sports. And about midway through high school, I realized that, you know, I was having trouble doing pull-ups and push-ups and sit-ups and things like that. And, you know, for me at that time, I kind of felt like, oh, maybe I'm not, you know, trying hard enough, or, you know, I just need to put in more effort and things like that. I started like lifting weights and things like that, but it didn't really get any better. And on the lacrosse field, you know, I was really well known for being like a really fast guy. I can like zip him down the field back and forth, you know, doing whatever. But I just realized I was losing my speed and things like that. And that was my senior year that year. And I was telling my parents, you know, it seems like, you know, I have facial weakness and I have all this other weakness going on. It seems like there's something wrong. My parents were like, yeah, this is not normal. So they took me to a neurologist and he did some testing. And he's like, oh, you probably have FSH, but, you know, you either have to do a muscle biopsy or a DNA test to confirm. And we did the DNA test and, yeah, I got, confirmed for FSH1.
So what was that first reaction or feeling that you had when they dropped that on you, the FSH? Were you, I would imagine you were somewhat perplexed of what it was, or did you know what it was?
I had a feeling it was something like some sort of atrophy, like type disease. I wasn't really sure. I kind of, in my gut, I kind of knew. And when I got the diagnosis, I was kind of relieved. You know, I finally knew what it was and all that. You know, I didn't really think about it much. Upwards to, I think, my junior year of college. I mean, all throughout college, I was still able to, you know, run not as fast as I used to, but, you know, I did like Tough Mudders and I trained for triathlons and things like that. But I think my junior year, I got pretty badly injured. And like, I was kind of like, I'm like bedridden for like 6 or so months. And I just realized that my strength was just rapidly decreasing. And, you know, during that time, I was like, you know, what am I going to do? This is, you know, this is awful. And I got kind of in a bad frame of mind, got kind of depressed, all that stuff. But hopefully, you know, luckily it didn't last too long. I think it lasted about like 3 or 4 months until I like, you know, took myself to therapy and got the help I needed. And, you know, I started falling back more on my friends and my family and things like that to help cope and kind of accept this disease I had and the weakness that I was, you know, starting to show all over my body and things like that.
So you were very, you know, you're very athletic. You said you were doing a lot of sports, lacrosse. Those are not easy sports to participate in. They're physically demanding, of course. I've never played lacrosse. I played some hockey, so I can kind of understand a little bit of the wear and tear of what that would do to somebody, but also the heavy competitiveness. You know, obviously you're a competitive person. So kind of stepping away then from that, and this is, I'd imagine you're a little less athletic than you used to be. What do you do with that competitive edge and that drive now?
I try to channel it to other things. I'm heavily involved in a volunteer organization called Engineers Without Borders, where we, you know, we volunteer locally, nationally, and like internationally, doing various engineering projects or just non-engineering projects, like volunteering at the food bank and things like that. You know, channel all the competitiveness and the energy that I have towards, you know, helping others and giving back. And, you know, this past July, I actually went to Cameroon for a trip, which was a great experience. I've traveled to Tanzania and El Salvador as well, that organization, and, you know, I couldn't be happier to found something to, you know, channel myself into.
And I've asked, you know, Carden and Lexi. I said, you know, what advice do you give someone that's recently diagnosed? I'm going to ask you that same question, however, with a little twist. I guess with someone that's been in or has your, you know, your athletic prowess and the things you used to do, so, you know, all those athletic things you were a part of. So if you had to talk face-to-face with someone that was like you in that regard, was highly competitive, well, you still are. That doesn't die, I know. But when you used to take it and put it on the field, you know, and then you get diagnosed with this, so you might not be able to do that any longer. What advice do you give those athletes out there that maybe are facing this, you know, right now where those athletic things might be starting to fade?
You know, what Carden said, I mean, just trying to find some avenue towards acceptance. You know, in terms of athletics, I mean, there's certain – you may not be able to play lacrosse, but you might be able to still, you know, run, you know, or still be able to participate in athletics. Not the same level, but still find a way to find it – channel your, you know, athleticism and your competitiveness and all that stuff. Or you know, volunteer or – you know, concentrate on your studies or just find some other avenue to channel that.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're spot on there. For me, I mean, I was not as, athletic as you were talking, you know, I wasn't at those levels, played mostly, you know, pickup games or sports, but pretty much always outside doing something. And as I got older, I mean, I knew I was just naturally slowing down, getting into my 40s, whatever, but and like you, it's like you realize, no, there's a little more to it. And I like your advice there. You're kind of channeling that to something else. I decided to put more energy into coaching, which hence kept me somewhat athletic. I still have to do some of those things or demonstrate a drill or, you know, you have to be on your feet. You have to do things. But it kind of, you know, linked into that same passion, you know, of, hey, you know, now I'm going to teach this. I can't do it as well as I used to, but I know I can still teach it. It's kind of like, you're right. You got to try to find those avenues, those things to channel that energy to keep the positivity going. If not, it sounds like you're a lot like me. Your mind might go into some dark places that you don't want to, you know, and I think help redirect is a huge factor.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, even, you know, redirecting, it takes some time to, like, adapt and kind of get used to this new thing that you're doing. And, you know, you're certainly going to, you know, feel sad and kind of feel depressed, but, you know, what I normally do is I just have a good cry and then concentrate on, you know, the good things, you know.
Right. You got to sometimes flush it out a little bit and know it's okay to do that. But you're right then kind of, all right, that's enough. Now let's go, you know. I thank you, James, for joining us, telling us your story. Very brave of you, and I'm glad you took the time today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks. All right, let's take our next caller. This is going to be a caller that has a last four digits of 8475. You're in a 208 area code. Let's welcome you in now. Welcome to the FSH Side Radio Show.
Hi.
Hi.
So my name is Kendra, and I have FSH, and I went to a conference in May that was like an FSH conference in Salt Lake City. And I was already familiar with the FSH Society, but I followed you guys on Facebook and heard about this. So I decided to tune in and give my 2 cents.
Absolutely. I'm glad you did that. I'm glad you decided to dial us up. Thanks for waiting so long to get on. So you have you have great stamina. what is your 2 cents? What would you like to share?
It was really good to talk to the other. I mean, to hear the other two girls and their perspective. Because I mean, like I think you said that it's not, you know, you don't really get to talk to someone or meet someone in your lifetime that has FSH, but I do have, I had a brother and he had FSH. So I'm kind of in between the two girls where one didn't have any family members and then the other girl had like a whole slew of family members. So I was diagnosed, I think I was like officially, I knew I had it because My brother got diagnosed, I believe, when he was like 6, around that time. And and they misdiagnosed him a few times. And I think that was pretty common back then, you know, not a lot of people knew about it. And that was kind of a common thing with it. So, so yeah, he got diagnosed when he was young. And then I showed some of the same symptoms. So they kind of knew right away that I had it because I had like the facial weakness. And my symptoms were, I was pretty young. Like I've never been able to like really smile or anything. So where the girls have had like the progressive facial weakness, I've always had that.
Right.
And I think it's like, it's gotten worse, but it was already so bad. So, yeah, can definitely relate to that. So, so I knew pretty young, you know, I think I knew way before I was officially diagnosed because my brother had it. And so my parents knew that I had it when I followed some of those same patterns.
So my question then, like I've asked the others is, you know, what's the advice for those that are recently diagnosed that you would give?
I like what the other people said is really accepting it. I think that is like so big. And I mean, I'm 23 and I feel like I'm still accepting it, but, cause it's just, you know, it's a progressive thing. So it's this grieving process because you lose muscle and then you lose where you were. And so it's like, you're grieving that loss and it's constantly grieving and then accepting and then going through all over again. So, and then I also would say one thing that has been huge for me is having social support. I have like a really good husband and I have an awesome family and great friends. I have a twin sister and she's like always got my back, and same with everyone else, you know, they just are there for me no matter what. And I think that that is huge, just to have people that are there to talk to you if you need to, or they're just going to not even, they don't even have to talk about it. It's just people that are there.
And I think you're spot on with that. Thanks for the call. Thanks for coming on and sharing. We hope that you listen each month forward now.
Yes, I'll definitely like to do that.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
So another great story, you know, and that to me is the underlying theme. It's about coping. It's about, you know, redirecting. It's about getting rid of the negative energy. I mean, I think James put it very well too. It just, sometimes you just got to have a good cry, you know. We've had some awesome calls. We got one more call coming up, and it's none other than June Kinoshita. I think she's gonna come on. Maybe she'll share a story, or maybe just some news and notes about what's going on in the FSH society. Either way, let's welcome in June right now. Hey, June, how's it going?
Hey, going well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I tell you, I'm just hopping around over here like a jackrabbit as best I can. You know, these are fantastic, fantastic calls. The switchboard was lighting up with quite a few calls, probably the most we've had. The chat room was loaded relatively well as well. So, kudos to you for getting the word out about this episode.
Well, thank you. I hope this is the first of many such episodes that, you know, we really are a community on the air, and the more voices, more people want to join in and share their stories, the better. So I hope this has opened the gate for that happening for future shows.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'm okay with being busy over here. I'm totally fine with it. if that's what it's gonna be, I'm all in. So no problem. No problem.
Yeah. So I loved hearing the stories of all of your guests before, and I think one of the things that really, there are a couple things that really strike me. One is what Kendra just said, is that social support is really important. Because the other theme is that, you know, this is a progressive condition. So when you lose something, you have to grieve it. You know, you have to you have to adjust to this change in your life and go through those seven stages of, you know, grief and loss and
right.
so on. And having friends and family around who understand that and can support you makes such a huge difference. And in order to get that support, you need to first accept that you have it. You need to be able to be open about it. You know, otherwise you can't access that social support, you know? So there's so many, you know, positive benefits that come from being able to just say, you know, that this is what you have. And you know, we have a brochure that a patient who had studied kind of social sciences put together for us. And it's a great brochure. She based it on interviews, so not just her own personal experience, but really interviewing systematically other patients with a variety of experiences. And I think it's helpful because it gives you some ideas, it gives you some language about how to talk about it, how to approach, you know, asking for help or making your needs known, and a lot of things that can be uncomfortable for people to do. So just having examples of how people have had those conversations, I think, is really helpful. So you know, that's a brochure we have online, or you can call in and we can send it to you. So I recommend that highly. The other thing that's me is that, you know, listening to Cardin and Lexi and James is that in a funny way, having FSHD has enabled each of these young people to find purpose. And it goes beyond just, you know, I mean, a lot of it is around advocating for themselves and for other patients, for their community. That's a really big thing. Or also, as James, you know, he blew me away when he was talking about how he is part of Engineers Without Borders. And they do these engineering projects to bring clean water in developing countries. And, you know, just to get yourself out of your own head to say, you know, hey, you know, I still have things to do, give other people and ways to help other people. And I think some of that also comes from developing compassion. When you have a disabling condition, you suddenly, it opens your eyes to what many other people go through for all kinds of reasons. And I just find that really one of the most inspiring and moving things about this community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, so many.
Absolutely.
Habits. And it makes me also think, I was reading, and I think many of you may have heard about this recently. Earlier this month, a golfer, a young professional golfer, Morgan Hoffman,
yes.
Announced through a blog post that he has FSHD. And, you know, it's a story, the outline sounds very similar to a lot of what people go through with, you know, these symptoms that he couldn't understand that puzzled him, and finally finding a doctor who told him this is what he has. And, you know, he took some time to let that sink in, but then he kind of just came right out and said, okay, I got to tell people this is what I have, and I still intend to play. You know, it's affected some of his muscles, but he's one of the top young athletes in his field, and he intends to continue competing and throw everything he has into it. And at the same time, he said he's also found purpose. He feels like almost like he was put on earth to have both this great talent and have this condition that he's now going to become an advocate for and raise awareness. And he's planning a fundraising golf tournament. And you know, he's another, I mean, I hope maybe someday he'll hear this podcast. If you're out there, get in touch with us.
Right.
Doing, you know, he's just the latest, you know, prominent member of this of our community. And, you know, we're just, I'm just so proud to be able to work with all of you.
Yeah, we're, and I know I'm speaking for many that we're very grateful for all the work you do at the FSH Society, June, and, you know, having things like this for people to use as vessels for, you know, coping, healing, you name it. And we definitely thank you for all the effort and all the work you do, as well as the others at the FSH Society.
Well, thank you. Well, I really feel that the more we band together and share these stories and support each other, the stronger we all become. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see.
So is there anything that you wanted to share before we let you go that's coming up in 2018, or anything that you want people to have on their radar?
Well, sure. Well, of course, I want everybody to mark on their calendars June 9th and 10th as our big international hoedown in Las Vegas.
That's right.
Where you'll get to meet and rub shoulders with world experts, grill them with your questions, find out the latest that's going on, workshops on a whole host of these issues. I'm sure you'll meet many of the people who are on the radio show tonight and our other episodes. It feels like a massive family reunion. And if you've never met other patients or families, or, you know, it's a great place to have your coming out ceremony. There's not a better place in the world. So mark your calendars. And we'll be posting shortly on our website the registration for this conference. We picked a location where flights are relatively inexpensive. There's very good accessible public transportation into the city, and hotels are relatively inexpensive. But it is still, you know, for some people they may feel it's out of reach. We have a scholarship program that you can apply for. And you know, we don't want the cost to be a barrier, because we just feel it's so important for people to have this opportunity. So, I just wanted to mention that. And then we have lots of meetings that we're scheduling. They're not on our calendar yet because we're still nailing down all the specific dates and times and so on. But there will be a lot. We have over 25 active local groups around the country.
Wow.
So we'll be posting those. So be sure to check and see if there's anything near you. And also, really importantly, if you want a group to meet where you are, step up. That would be a great way to be an advocate for the community.
Absolutely.
And help us organize one, because only you can tell us, you know, where there's a nice, accessible place to meet, whether it's your library, your living room, you know, a Denny's, or, you know, whatever, a place where people can get together. We can't really figure that out easily from Boston, but if you can help us with that, we can help you with reaching out, getting people to the get together, putting it on our calendar and so on. So maybe that's, you know, if it's something you've longed to have, put that on your New Year's resolution that you will, you know, step up and help make it happen this coming year.
Sounds awesome. Thank you, June, for joining us and giving us the final word. And once again, for all you do with the FSH Society. Thank you, and Happy New Year.
You're so welcome. And also, we have our year-end fundraiser. Don't forget that. So important. Everything we do, we can do because you support us financially. So I have to make a little pitch for that. By December 31st, midnight, postmark your check or make an online donation, and it will get us off to a great start so that we can do wonderful things in 2018. And thank you so much, Tim, and Happy New Year to you.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So that's June Kinoshita joining us to finish out the show. I must say, this was I've loved every single one of the shows that I've done thus far. I love podcasting in general, but like so many others we heard from tonight, I realized that maybe my calling was to, I guess, have this FSHD But then to take what I think is a God-given talent and use that to help advocate and get the word out. So all in all, I guess that's my story, and I'm happy to continue to share that with you as you listen from month to month, episode to episode. I wish you all the very best in the next year to come. My special thanks to all our callers, Carden, Lexi, James, Kendra, thanks for calling in, June as well. All those things you need to know about FSH Society, go ahead and visit fshsociety.org. If you got more comments or you couldn't quite get on the show today, we apologize. You can always send me those emails, fshradiohost@gmail.com. Gets right to me. Follow us on Twitter as well, @FSH Society, and Facebook. Thanks again. Happy New Year, and good night.